You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Natalie Golay. Joining us in the studio once again are resident foodies. Erica Bishop, a former executive producer for the Food Network. Today she's the owner of the iconic Pot Rack store in Jacksonville, Oregon, and writes a food column for Southern Oregon Magazine. Hi, Erica.
Hello, good morning.
Also in the studio is food stylist William Smith, who recently celebrated, 30 years of professional food styling?
I beg your pardon.
Just 30.
Right. Well, this styling guy is also the host of the Savor podcast here on the Jefferson
Yay.
Exchange. Welcome, Will.
Hi, good morning.
Well, it's mid-November and Thanksgiving's right around the corner, so you know what we're going to be talking about today. Now, many people... Yeah, I know, right? Food, of course. For many people, this means that family and friends gathering around a familiar meal of turkey and all the fixings, green beans, mashed potatoes, etc. And there are regional variations, but overall, we know a traditional Thanksgiving meal when we see one. There's something comforting about an annual tradition, but it can be hard to keep things fresh and interesting. So in this episode, we're going to talk about ways to refresh and reboot the Thanksgiving meal. But before we get to all these yummy ideas, let's talk about some of the more memorable or not so memorable Thanksgivings. I mean, I have to say that in my family, it was never a big holiday because we lived abroad. And so if we did it, it was rarely very traditional.
And yeah, it was our family's big deal.
Was
for,
it?
For the year.
Well, yeah, that's what I've discovered since I've been back in the States, for that it's actually bigger than Christmas often for
yeah,
many people.
I think so.
Well,
yeah.
I think too, maybe, date-wise, I think the 60s, 70s, that was a big time of Thanksgiving.
Yes, definitely.
For whatever reason. Maybe it's because I just got older and it felt like it phased out, but... is it as important as it was? I'm curious.
You know, the thing that I always liked about it was that it's not, you know, religion-based.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about coming together as a clan and spending the day together. You know, the reason I went to cooking school was because of those holidays spent with my grandmother. She was a matriarch of maybe 25, 30 people.
Wow.
And she cooked... she would rarely sit down with us. She'd already start cleaning as we were eating. Martyr.
Did you call her Nona?
No, Grandma.
Okay.
It was a very big deal. It got me really into cooking. It was my favorite holiday with her.
Oh, that's
and nice. I was like her little, you know, tiny sous chef.
Right.
I loved everything that she did, and she did everything. She was from Victor, Idaho, by the Tetons, and a prairie girl, one of 13 brothers and sisters. And she did everything from scratch, like just like everything. And one of those things was that... consommé, which, you know, people just don't have the time to do that kind of thing. And I just loved watching that raft form.
Wow.
And then that would usually be a first course. And I would punch out with these little cutters, a little punch out, a little garnish for the... to float in the consommé.
Well, of course you did. You were future stylist in the making.
Yeah, you were already doing it. Yeah.
I loved it.
That's a lovely, lovely memory. I don't have those so much around Thanksgiving.
Right.
In Canada, we did celebrate it a bit more. And more recently, about 5 years ago, I was still living in Mexico, and I had friends from Canada and the U.S., and they both invited me. And in Canada, it's in October. So I had two full Thanksgiving meals within a month of each other. But for me, Thanksgiving, actually a full Thanksgiving meal is kind of exotic because it, you know, it's not same
it's
old,
not
same old. Yeah,
yep.
It's not the normal for me. So right. So I kind of look forward to it. I'm like, ooh, what's this? How about you, Erica?
Well, let's see. When I was a child growing up in Michigan, I had this very fabulous uncle. His name was Uncle Dick, and he lived in New York City, and he was like the bomb. He was everything. You know, he was a musician. He wrote jingles. He wrote Broadway plays. So he was this very super creative guy. So whatever he brought to the table was always going to be my favorite thing. And he always brought ambrosia salad.
I love that. Is he from Southern roots?
Oh, heck no. Montana all the way. But like, you know, ambrosia salad when you're a kid and like, you know, because it's got canned mandarins in it, canned pineapple, maybe sour cream if you're feeling super like racy, but otherwise it's like Cool Whip, you know?
Right.
And marshmallows.
So that was a salad? I'm not sure I've had it. Yes. I've seen one, I think, but I'm not sure I've ever tasted it.
It's a salad, especially. It's very much a Southern thing. In fact, I did trace it back and I found it was first printed in 1867 in a cookbook called Dixie Country.
Oh, so interesting.
So I love that. But yeah, it was a very popular salad through the early 1900s and apparently in 1960s as well because we had it every time.
Yeah, I would imagine. I love gelatin desserts. Kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like we used to do a lot of, my mother used to make savory gelatins like an aspic or things like that. And that was always really, really lovely. But I haven't had the sort of sweeter version.
Well, just open a few cans and get some Cool Whip in your set.
People who have not had the beauty of aspic, I mean, that's one of those things. My grandmother, you know, that's what she'd also do with her consommé. Such a tasty, melt in your mouth, savory. My mouth.
Some of that is definitely missed. But we still make ambrosia salad. We just use fresh.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I like that.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, you're listening to JX Foodie on the Jefferson Exchange with my guests Erica Bishop and Will Smith, and we're talking about Thanksgiving, of course, in November. And so, Will, you were talking about, the other day you were talking about something that I'm unfamiliar with as well, is relish trays.
So I have to tell you another grandmother story. I was doing some research and it probably hit its, you know, it's from England, 18th century.
Of course.
And then it came to this country during colonial times. And then it was at its peak, like 30s, 40s, and 50s. Pressed glass tray, usually beaded. And
sectioned.
Yeah, sectioned. black olives, carrot sticks or celery sticks, pickles of some kind.
Pickled asparagus, pickled mushrooms.
And that sort of was going out during the 70s. And then that whole, coming from California and being in San Francisco in the 80s, that whole rebirth through Alice Waters of California cuisine and fresh produce, then sort of crudité sort of became that substitution for the relish tray with a dip and all kinds of fresh veggies because we were all pushing that then. And then now I think the way that you can update it even further, there are so many fantastic pickles. Right. You could pickle green beans, pickled mushrooms, pickled dill pickles, radish pickles,
pickled onions,
you could put some
kimchi.
Fermented stuff too.
Yes. That could all be fermented as well. Yeah. And then a couple wedges of cheese.
So maybe we went from a relish tray to a crudité to a charcuterie.
Yes, and now that big charcuterie board is kind of the modern equivalent of that, and it still has those same items
on it.
It
does, nuts and things as well.
Which I think is a really beautiful kind of growth
of that. At what
point
is that just...
I like that.
What part of the meal is that? Is that something that is it an entree? Is it a...
I would put it at a first thing on the table so people can have something to nibble on. But I always sat next to the relish tray.
Well, because of the black olives.
Right.
Yes. With your fingers in them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something really, I always love that. And I still now, with a cheese platter with charcuterie, that to me, that could be my last meal. It just has everything on it that I really love.
With some good bread.
It's a good bread and some good wine.
And some good, yes. Well, we never want to forget the wine.
Yes.
And I mean, speaking of like spread and what it looks like and stylings, what about Thanksgiving stylings? Do you have any thoughts for a spectacular table?
I just was out gathering stuff for my new house yesterday.
Really? Oh, wow.
So what's beautiful about this area is if you take a little nature walk, you can pick up some cool things, some evergreen, fallen leaves, some twigs, stones if you wanted to.
Pine cones.
Pine cones, squash left over from Halloween. incorporate some apples and pears into it, and you end up with this really beautiful kind of natural centerpiece for your table, and that cost you zero money, which also is very nice.
Yeah.
It's amazing what you can find on a dog walk.
I have to think, I have to bring a bag next time I walk my dog. Exactly. Think about that. And, okay, Erica, you've done TV and you've done the Food Network and other shows. Did you ever have any special Thanksgiving shows that you...
I'm sure a dozen.
I bet, many. But I'm just I'm guessing that there were many. But
there were many, many dozens to thousands. But honestly, I was tasked with producing an entire hour special, but they, you know, about a month before, right?
Yikes.
Like it's like, come on, and but it, you know, we needed to shoot it in the fall colors. So we did need to really press it right up to the holiday, you know. So we ended up going out to Connecticut and renting a barn, just a barn. And full cast, crew, everybody, there were 30 people living and sleeping in that barn so that we could get this thing shot in a week. And we would be shooting day and night, you know, depending on what it was.
Right.
But the thing I remember is, you know, trying to set up a kitchen.
Oh,
I mean, all of the things besides all of, you know, the shooting and the lighting and everything. It was just astronomically horrible. But I just remember.
I sympathize. I can totally.
And it was cold.
Oh.
And, you know, and clammy and no place to sit except on hay bales. So, yeah, it was fun. And we just decided we were going to laugh every time something went wrong. So there was hysterical laughter going on all the time. But we got it done, and, you know, it made air, and it was beautiful, and I'm very proud of that.
Oh,
so
wow,
sweet.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds wonderful. Yeah, so, and, you know, before we hit the break, let's talk a little bit about just generally why we might want to renew Thanksgiving meal.
Boredom.
Yeah. That's, I didn't want to say it. I was just letting you say
it. For me, it's boredom a little bit because I've always cooked, I mean, for how many years now, right? And it's this, it's Groundhog Day, and I get a little tired of that. At the same time, I do want the same flavors.
Right.
You know, like I want my sausage stuffing.
There's always a couple people in my family that were like the trailblazers.
Yep.
And of course, ultimately, I think people do want that memory food. So they were kind of picked out and picked upon because people, they enjoyed the new flavor, but they still want the old one.
Right.
So you're saying when Brussels sprouts started coming on the scene, that was never on the table. And now it's very much a fixture.
Yes, I think that's right. That's right. I didn't like them when I was growing up.
No.
I'm still not a huge fan myself, but I have to say one day I had one that was a casserole with chestnuts. It was chestnuts and Brussels sprouts, not a pairing I would have thought of. It was amazing.
I bet.
It was really good.
That sounds
good.
So I don't like chestnuts or Brussels sprouts.
Well, there you go.
So I'm going to work on that one.
Creamed onions.
Oh, creamed onion. The little pearl onions. Yeah.
I love that. And that is something that I don't often see at other families' homes, but that was definitely, that was one of my grandmother's favorites.
Oh, that sounds very yummy. So really, basically, the idea, if you have a spread with a lot of people, you just kind of have to think about, okay, a little innovation, making it new, but also finding ways to have that comfortable, recognizable flavors. And I think one of the ways we're going to talk about we can do that is by adding new sides and adding things here and there while preserving the main meal as relatively intact. I guess it depends how adventurous you're feeling and who your guests are.
Right.
But you don't want to disappoint anyone, right?
Right.
So that's the thing. And
I do think as a gift, as a guest to someone else's Thanksgiving, you are inherently disappointed because it is not your memory. It's somebody else's memory.
That's very true.
But I've had some fantastic, like, friends' Thanksgivings that are great.
Well, stop right there because we have to take a short break. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. I'm Natalie Golay. My guests are Erica Bishop and Will Smith. Today on JX Foodie, we're talking about bringing some new ideas to the Thanksgiving menu. I guess one easy way to do it, to introduce it, is by adding new side dishes to an existing core meal. I have to say that that can be really great if you have people who are on different who have different diets, such as vegetarians and vegans. You can have a lot of nice sides for them. And I always have a great meal with my vegetarian family members. And last Friday, I actually stopped over in Seattle and I was sitting at the table and my sister-in-law made a fantastic, absolutely fantastic kale and yam salad. And it was so good and colorful, I used it for the cover picture on our feature page for this episode. And I just had to take pictures of it. And I'm not even typically partial to kale. I'm not, ooh, but I loved this. And what she did was adapt a recipe that she'd already seen, and she'd also had it in restaurants. But she, with you know, there are a number of different versions. But this one had dried cranberries, natural pumpkin seeds. Some recipes call for brown sugar and stuff on the pumpkin seeds. She just leaves them natural. Olive oil, apple cider vinegar, and a touch of maple syrup. And you don't even taste the maple; it just makes it really rich. It was phenomenal.
That does sound good.
Yeah. How about you guys?
And that's a tricky one because, you know, I do question struggling with salad at the Thanksgiving table.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Like a leafy salad of some sort. Because it just doesn't seem like it sits on the plate so well. And there's so much, do you know what I mean?
There's a lot of food zones
and there's
happening.
Zones. And like, you, how many plates can you put when you have like a full table? So that's an interesting, good one. Yeah.
I kind of like doing that after you've had kind of a heavy meal to then have a salad after.
Yeah.
It's kind of a nice.
I've always liked that much better anyway, salad after the meal.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah. And if you're having, like I have those vegan meals with them, it's part of the main meal, but it makes a really beautiful table. And then we just add like a wild rice and hazelnut salad or something. And
And there you are. Yeah.
And there you are. You have just this most amazing meal. And it's not traditional, but it is in their house, and it's very good.
I think, too, a hard thing about the sides is they became very heavy over time. And especially, like, with the advent of the green bean casserole, which sort of was the early version of Brussels sprouts, you know, suddenly that was on the table and became a mainstay. But that's just canned chicken soup or mushroom soup in it with, fried onions on top. And
it's never a favorite of mine.
Not a big favorite. I mean, you know, it's just – you know, it's almost like another stuffing. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I feel like adding in more like fresh, but like I love garden peas, but in a bechamel and then with a little nutmeg and dill.
That sounds good.
It's rich, but it's very fresh, you know, fresh tasting and very pretty on the plate.
Right, because the peas aren't overcooked or anything.
No,
right.
Just that's, touched. Yeah. Just they should be bright green.
Exactly. That's really important. Then they just pop in your mouth. They're
just and your bechamel can be whatever it is. It's a white sauce. So how do you like your white sauce and how do you like to flavor that? You can.
Right.
That's where you can do a change up.
Yeah.
And it's
simple.
It's fun for me to also just play with the textures of the vegetables. So carrots, squash, parsnips, potatoes. You could pan fry them. You can roast them. You can puree them. And I'm a huge baby food fan. I just love pureed vegetables.
Haven't we already gone through this?
I know. I know. But I love that as it's so soothing.
Comforting. Well, that's the whole comfort food thing. But, you know, you can also take some of the vegetables, like the green beans, for example. They don't have to be in a casserole.
No, I like to do mine prosciutto wrapped.
Yeah.
So take like, you know, 8 beans or so, nice and long, don't cut them, and then just wrap them in, you know, a bacon or a prosciutto or some kind of salty meat and make little bouquets, if you will, and
that's
just roast them
too.
Off.
Yeah.
They're pretty. They're lovely. They're a nice little break, from
like
the
that.
Saucy stuff.
Yeah. Well, and you can saute your in your green beans and parsley and white onion and butter, and but very, it's delicious.
Super simple. With,
right. Yeah,
right.
Really,
I think simple,
simple
is the ticket. Yeah.
Because everybody, after they eat, everybody eats everything really fast, and everybody's just so full, and they say, oh, I ate too much, and right. so on. And so, you know, it's not a bad thing to have, to keep some parts of the meal at least on the lighter side.
Oh, I agree.
Right.
Okay, so how do we all feel about sweet potatoes and what to do with them? Come on, bring it.
Those are fighting words.
Why? Because they must be on the table, or you don't care so much.
I'm not a sweet potato fan.
Oh, I do. So many things we're learning.
I do like roasted sweet potatoes.
Oh yeah.
But in my family, it was the
marshmallows on top.
Yes, yep. With pecans.
Yes,
wow,
sir.
With pecans.
Yeah.
Well, the pecans is bougie. You guys were bougie. We were all marshmallows.
My grandmother was bougie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. She does sound like a fun yeah. girl.
And she doesn't say pea. She said petit pois.
Petit pois.
A petit pois.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, too, about a ravioli, but mm-hmm. instead of maybe squash, which would be, what if you stuffed that with a sweet potato and did a brown butter?
The delicious.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I think that's nice. That's
it's a
like
lot
a first
of work,
course.
But yeah. that's, yeah, exactly.
Sweet.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and so okay, so we have a lot of ideas there going for our sides, and maybe let's say you don't want to change the protein yet. We haven't gotten to that point yet, but let's say you want to just do something different with the turkey. Now I know that's kind of regional, a little bit, but generally speaking, roast turkey is kind of the go-to.
And I do love it.
Yeah, and so do I.
Yeah,
so do
I love how it smells in the oven.
Oh yeah.
I love how it smells when I'm cooking it, and then I don't want to eat it.
I'm
Are
with you.
Are you with me on that?
Yeah,
yeah, okay.
Totally. It's very enveloping.
So there's a lot of new ways. We used to just stuff a bird, and now we've learned that really stuffing a bird is really not the smartest thing.
It slows it down
and also can lead to lots of dangerous things.
Yes. Mm.
So people are grilling, they're frying, they're mm-hmm. spatchcocking.
Mm-hmm. I love spatchcocking a bird.
What is spatchcocking?
So turning it face down, taking the backbone out, mm-hmm. both sides, and then pressing that rib cage out on both sides, flipping it backhand and really patting it down. And the thing that's nice about that is it's all the same width.
Oh, it cooks right. very
so
evenly.
It cooks, yeah. And it cooks much faster, mm-hmm. like half the time. And wow. all the skin is crispy and brown.
Oh,
it's very pretty.
Yeah,
wow.
I like
it's
it.
Just a different way. I think the Norman Rockwell way of displaying, right? Taking the turkey to
yes.
the table. Even I've struggled with that over the years in the sense of, do I have to bring the darn turkey out? Can I just slice it now?
Right.
Right. No, everybody wants to see the turkey. But right. I'm over that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That to platter a spatchcock turkey, it's so easy
yes.
to cut up into pieces, too.
Mm-hmm. I cook my turkey upside down, if anybody cares, because I'm weird.
You're listening to JX Foodie on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Natalie Golay. My guests are Erica Bishop and Will Smith, and we are talking about Thanksgiving, your Thanksgiving menu, and right now we're talking about how to cook turkey in different ways.
Upside down.
Upside down. So what does that mean? How do you do that?
Well, I just have a V-shaped roasting rack, and I, you know, put...
So breast side down.
Breast side down.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Just so the breast... Yep. So that, all the dark meat is at the top and that cooks slower. So it mm-hmm. needs, oh. so, and the breast usually dries out.
Right.
So if you just flip it over, you know, you end up with a very juicy bird.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then
that's
you stuff, you know, the cavity with loosely, with, mm-hmm. you know, onions and oranges and mm. other things, spices and herbs, mm. and it just all soaks into the breast.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't thought of
and
that.
And then at the end, flip it back to brown it if you care, if you want to have that moment.
Right.
But if not,
right.
don't hurt yourself.
Right. Exactly.
Well, one of the best turkeys I ever had, I mean, other than my mom's, which were always great, but was in Mexico, again, an American, at one of those two Thanksgivings I mentioned. He cooked it with dark beer. So it was roasted, but he basted it in butter and dark beer throughout the cooking process. And it was the juiciest, the breast, everything was just amazing. Just amazing.
That does sound great.
Yeah. I didn't watch him do it, so I can't explain it.
And there's
it,
so many different flavors of beer, like which one.
Yeah. Mm. He did a sort of a dark stout kind of beer, but yeah, you could mix it up.
You know, the bane of our Thanksgivings was a vertical standalone roaster, electric roaster, that was essentially made to cook turkeys. And my grandmother had one of those
things.
That had
to have been a huge piece of equipment.
It was. It's like this big, like pillar, about 5 feet tall, with a big drop-in roasting pan. And,
wow.
You know, she cooked it for 8 hours.
Oh my goodness. Was that good?
You look skeptical.
She'd always get like a 25-pounder, 28-pounder, huge bird.
Okay.
And,
wow.
You know, having it breast side up in that, the breast was often like sawdust.
Oh. Okay, so it's delicious.
Yeah.
So I'm here to tell you, like, don't get the Big Tom. Get this. No.
Oh,
okay.
Go 10 to 12 pounds.
10 to 12.
Is my favorite.
Max is 14.
Yeah,
and
I
if
agree.
You need to do two, do two. Like you're having a crowd, do two. Don't go for
better.
The bigger bear. It's much better.
Yeah, better tasting.
Well, and the wonderful time you spend seasoning and, you know, getting under the skin and buttering and all those tricks of putting herbs under the skin. Yeah, you can do all that, but it's going to taste better in two small birds.
Yeah, I agree.
And what if you don't want turkey? What if you change that up? You keep the rest kind of similar, but the flavors still have to work together. What would you do?
Well, I was having a conversation with my son about this, and we were talking about, you know, maybe we're all old enough now, you know.
Okay, right.
They've all graduated into adulting. So they were talking about a salmon, and I'm like, yeah, stuffed salmon. I've done like a stuffed salmon with, you know, brown sugar and oranges, fennel and white onions. Delicious. Mm. And they've always loved that. And they're like, yeah, let's do a salmon. Because, you know, they probably had salmon, you know.
Sure.
You know, the pilgrims had salmon,
yeah.
Right? And
sure.
I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's fine, isn't it, Will?
You know, my mom often would do a turkey before Thanksgiving. So then Thanksgiving, I'm from San Diego. We would do a giant platter of turkey enchiladas,
or we would have
a taco party with turkey tacos and fresh guacamole and fresh salsa, and that's a really fun thing to do with a family because everybody can help out, and it's just kind of you don't have to do the big roasted bird,
right?
You can actually start a day early and have kind of fun with it.
Or you can try a different bird, right?
Yes. Ooh, Cornish game hens.
Yeah. We've done that at home.
Poussin, our little baby chickens. What's so nice about that is you can split them, roast them in halves, and you can put vegetables underneath. That is a super fast thing to do for like 6, 8 to 10 people. Everybody gets half a bird.
Yeah. Pretty.
Yeah, and I think that's really nice, too.
Oh, wow. All this is just making me so hungry. And now we get to the end of the meal, maybe? Dessert? I'm not a huge dessert person.
Okay, I'm not either. Are you?
No, I'm done.
Oh, the three of us. No dessert.
Oh, my God. Okay, sorry. No dessert. Time to go.
I mean, I like them. I just prefer savory. So for me, I love pies and stuff, but I will go for the savory before I go for the sweet.
Mm-hmm. I do believe, though, that sacrilege is not having pumpkin pie. I do believe you have to have a pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
Pumpkin cheesecake.
Well, that too, but you have to have a pumpkin pie.
See, I discovered that a little bit late, and I mean, I was still a kid, but a little, and that was the ultimate exotic dessert for me. It was
pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie. It was just amazing when I discovered pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm. I just love an earthy tart, you know, just like whatever berry you've got out there,
berries.
Figs or whatever, and don't do a fussy like pie pan crust. Just do free form tart, fruit in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, butter it up. I'm happy with that.
Okay, so we are coming to the end of the show, and I just want to mention one thing. All this talk of holiday cheer and great food. It's also a good time to honor those among us who are struggling this year, and there are a lot of people struggling. And if Thanksgiving is about community, then let's remember some of our neighbors in need who need our help to put food on the table. And there are a lot of organizations in the Rogue Valley and Northern California that help out, food banks. There are organizations that are putting on, free Thanksgiving meals. There's one in Ashland. And they sometimes take volunteers as well. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's so important right now. What I'm seeing in the Jacksonville, Central Point area are people donating in different ways. Like there are food trucks out there right now. They're feeding children. And so donate to a food truck who might be doing that. That's another way to help.
Yeah. Definitely. And take some time. Turn off your phones. Enjoy your families.
Yeah.
Good yeah. One. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. My thanks to Erica Bishop and Will Smith for coming on the show once again and leaving us wondering if it's lunchtime yet.